Welcome to Unreal Bluegrass. I'm Steve Martin. We're going to talk to Robbie Foulkes. Robbie has, I'll say, 15, 16 albums that cover country music, honky-tonk, a little bit of swing, Americana, and he's done an album that is bluegrass. It's called Bluegrass Vacation on Compass Records. Let me acknowledge here that Allison Brown, who you know from this radio show, and you should know from her great music and Compass label, helped me find Robbie. It wasn't like he was lost, but she put me in contact with him, and I appreciate that very much. If you listen to Unreal Bluegrass and you know that I'm having a guest in the second hour that's a musician, I always ask them to choose three songs from their latest or whatever they want to play so that I can kind of package the conversation around those tunes. They kind of act as bumpers in a bowling alley, I suppose. So I will play for you first a tune from the brand new Bluegrass Vacation album, One Glass of Whiskey, again chosen by Robbie Foulkes, and we'll introduce a couple other songs as we go. Thank you so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. Without you, I would just be a very lonely person. To the listening audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a great new song, One Glass of Whiskey. It's on a brand new album, Bluegrass Vacation, from Robbie Foulkes. It's on the Compass label, which is always a fine label to be on, and Robbie Foulkes is with us today to talk about that new album and whatever else comes up. Hi, Robbie. How are you doing?
Hey, Steve. I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for taking time to talk about this great album. I've known of you for a long, long time. And I would say that, you know, I don't know what, 15, 16 albums somewhere are out there bouncing around. Maybe more than that, but that's kind of what I counted up. So, and your music, let me say this too. Categorizing music, I think, is always dangerous. It's either good or it's not. But I would tell to the listener, if you don't know Robbie Foulkes, go back and look up his discography. You'll find there's country, there's honky-tonk, there's kind of some swing music in there, there's Americana. It kind of covers everything. But on this album, Bluegrass Vacation, you've really brought it down to focus on the bluegrass influences in your music and your life. And it's a good one.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
All I got to say.
No, you don't. You don't have. I don't expect you to argue with me about it. I mean, it's pretty clear. I want you to agree with that one. So yeah, I want to ask you a little bit. The album's got 12 cuts on it. There's one instrumental, and all of them are written by you except Nashville Blues, which is a Delmore Brothers tune, and that, there's a great take on that that you have. And there's so many great people on this album with you that you've pulled in. And I think it's if the people would get the album and read the liner notes, it makes a lot of sense as to why you pulled from these people. But they're all stars. These are all bluegrass all stars that are playing with you on the album. So good luck. I don't know how you do that, by the way. When you're an artist and you start putting something like this together, how do you get all these people that are the top flight in the world to participate? I've never understood that.
Money works wonders, though, Steve. So,
all right,
that's okay. One thing.
Okay.
And I, you know, when I make my records, I save up money in advance, and I usually don't have them, you know, paid for by companies, and didn't in this case.
Okay, good. All right.
Well, I was a free agent at the time, so I like to sort of like be the decision maker and the money spender, at least, you know, initially, but. But yeah, it impressed myself how many of the people I corralled for this record, and I had a long list of wannagets because I thought, you know, in my life I may only end up making one purely bluegrass record, and there are just so many people that I want to include. And it happened that, you know, from just the last 9 or 10 years of doing this, that I had a lot of like people's with phone numbers in my hot little hands, and so that I could actually, had friendships with a few of these people, like Sam Bush and Sean Cowan and some others.
Some of the long-haired bluegrass guys.
Exactly. Some of my earliest heroes from when I was a kid.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. So even though you're paying, they don't have to say yes. I mean, I always take that as a compliment to the artist that you can reach out to people for whatever it's a whether you're trading for having participated in an album or you're just paying them to come in. They don't have to say yes. And I think the people that responded yes on this, I would say, again, this is an amazing all-star lineup. And it changes on each song. We'll go through some of the people that you have on here. They're all amazing musicians. But I wanted to talk to you, Robbie, before I forget. There are all the other names I know. The two names I don't know, Brennan Lee And I'll say his name is Scott Simontacci. I don't know those people, so I want to give them credit. They sing, and one of them plays guitar. Tell me a little bit about those folks, and then we'll get back into the album contents.
Sure. So Brennan is a singer-songwriter in her, I guess, mid-30s now, and she comes from the Great Plains, but spent a lot of time in Texas when she was younger, now lives in Nashville. And she has, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 records of great work out. And I produced one of the records, which is called Prairie Love Song.
Okay.
And she's just terrific, and people should check out her records. And Scott is a, and his last name is Simontacci.
Okay.
Has a band called Sheriff Scott and the Deputies, and he's been playing mandolin with me for a while. And I actually didn't know, I had never heard his guitar playing. I knew that he played it, but until that day that we recorded that song where he plays guitar on my record, I had not heard him play guitar. So, but he's the kind of guy you can rely on if, you know, he says he can do something, then he can do it. And he's also a good photographer and a hat maker, and he's a good documentarian of bluegrass. People can check out his pictures of Ralph Stanley and Tony Rice and many other, giants of the genre.
The song that I, and he does sing a lot, and of course, Brennan, beautiful voice, both of them, and the guitar playing that he does that I can see right away as I'm looking at the contents is Mama's Eyes, which is a great song.
That's right.
Yeah, that he's playing guitar on that with, and you've also got Brennan Lee again, and Todd Phillips, I know, is a bass player. You've pulled in all these great players. I did not know this. Maybe I wasn't paying attention, but you play a really good old-time style banjo. You play guitar and sing, and you wrote all these great songs. But I think your banjo playing on, like, old-time Music Is Here to Stay, and there's another one on here that always gets me. It might be
Cora May.
Yeah, that's a nice, and I really enjoy the very last cut is the old time Music Is Here. That's just you and a banjo and vocal, and that's a great song I think to end it with, because you go through all these influences, and you, if people read the liner notes, they can see your influences. They can see that you're still connected with, I guess you and I are probably about the same vintage, Robbie, because when I was back in those days, those superstars were still out making music, and Bill Monroe and the Osborne Brothers and Jimmy Martin, they were still doing it whenever they could. And you see those people, I don't know if you realize then, but I used to think, wow, we're seeing we're seeing the guys who founded this. This is the Mount Rushmore of what, and they're still out doing it and performing. It just was an amazing feeling to be in their presence, really.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing about, there's an event that I chronicle in one of the songs, which was a festival around Warrenton, Virginia in 1973. And to be, alive at that time and to see the creators, as you say, of the music, Monroe and the Stanleys and Scruggs, like they were all neck and neck at this festival alongside John McEwen and Jerry Garcia and John Hart, for all these people.
Yeah.
And in my mind, thinking back, well, in my mind being young, I thought, these cool people, these rock gods that look like me or like I want to look.
I see, I'm exactly like you. Go ahead.
are taking over, and there's kind of a little bit of a conflict or a rub between these two cultures, but that seems to be less and less the case as time goes by. It really seems that they just coexisted kind of more or less conflict-free, like surprisingly conflict-free over the years, and that was because of the thread of music connecting them. And for all this all in the family conflict between the generations, where people had stringy hair and long beards and looked strange and dressed shabbily, like the music was really what mattered ultimately.
I think that's what I've always thought, that the founders, will say, just for this conversation, of bluegrass, and we've mentioned a few of them, they knew these new guys could play. Now, they didn't like the music necessarily. They didn't like their influences because they could play everything. But I think on that level, they knew this, we'll call it small end newgrass people coming in. They knew these guys could play, and they respected that. That's what I always thought it was.
Yeah, I think, there were a few stodgy, hard to get along with people in that older generation, kind of handful of people. The larger truth, I think, was that there was just a lot of musical communication and warmth going on.
Yeah, well, and it's changed since then. You know, now the let's go ahead and say the Newgrass Revival Band, which we all know and love from those days. You know, they've been replaced by newer and younger players, and your song "Old Time Music Is Here to Stay." It's interesting to me because, well, first of all, it's a great song. I really do like it. I'm going to play it in the first hour of this show. You won't hear it, but the audience, by the time we get here, will have heard "Old Time Music Is Here to Stay." I feel there are more and more old time players out there for the younger. So, I don't know if they're starting over, but it seems to me there's so many great young players that are playing, we could call string music, we could call old time music. But I see that everywhere now, and they're incredibly talented, and they seem to be going back to the old style that you talk about in that song.
Yeah. And I know that when I was 10 or 20, I don't think it was just my perspective. It didn't seem like there were a ton of people playing clawhammer, yeah, banjo, but there were a ton of people playing three finger.
Right.
And for that reason, I just, that was one reason that I just sort of gravitated toward the Scruggs instruction book. And because I didn't even consider that there was this other alternative
either
out there. But later in life, like I only started frailing when I was in my 40s. And I just love it. I don't know why it waxed and waned over the years, but it does seem to be waxing now.
I think it's waxing on right now. I think I see them everywhere. And they're so, and then a lot of them go to schools and they get degrees in music, so they bring that theory, which you may or may not need it, but they have the skill, and they bring that theory back to what, and they go back to playing what we could loosely describe as old time music. And boy, it's amazing. Now, I don't know if the next jump will be that they all become into the bluegrass crowd or what. I think it works so well, like for you when you're singing. I think it's great. And on that song, the last tune again, "Old Time Music Is Here to Stay." I can't imagine a better instrument to accompany yourself on if you're going to talk about old time music than what I would call an open back banjo. I assume that's what you're playing, but it just seems so well fitted into accompanying yourself.
Yeah, something about it. I mean, people are probably better positioned to analyze it than me, but something about the way that you're attacking the strings with your bare hand, and under the strings is, you know, the skin of an animal in the old days. It's more vigorous and sort of animalistic and primal, I would say, than putting on metal picks under your fingers and doing the more sort of, in
there's
some ways, rhythmically challenging way of the Scruggs,
yeah,
style.
And there's more of an attack. It's yeah, I would think it's more of an attack that you do in the rhythm style of companies. You do have a waltz song on here, which I think is required on every bluegrass album. And I've
right.
never really understood that, except that it just carries forward. The music keeps going. You have "Lonely Ain't Hardly Alive," and it's the bluegrass waltz, and I'm always glad when people like you go back and pick up one of those, because that's a necessity in a bluegrass album, I think. So why talk a little bit about that tune, and then we'll bounce around a bit.
Sure. I don't know that I have much to say about the waltz, except that it always makes me think of Jimmy Martin, you know, the specifically up-tempo, bright waltz.
Yeah.
Not that he innovated that,
no.
But that's that he was a master of it in writing them and performing them. And also the pairing of the bright tempo with the depressing theme, you know, it's like you're singing about alcoholism and despair, but the playing and the tempo is going along, you know, it's kind of a fun, energetic tempo. So that's always a curious dissonance there.
Well, and that one you have, just for example, tune, you're on it. Chris Eldridge, amazing guitar player. Missy Raines, maybe one of the best bass players on the planet. Wes Corbett, amazing banjo player. Ronnie McCrory, everybody knows, mandolin. Shad Cobb, one of the go-to fiddle players. And Randy Kors is doing a vocal on this. And Randy is, people out there probably remember, Randy was one of the most fierce steel guitar players I think I've ever seen in my life. So you've got an all-star band right there, and it just all fits together so well.
Yeah, and I didn't mention earlier, but probably should, that some of these people play with me on the road, like Missy does. Shad plays a lot with me on the road.
Okay.
Todd Phillips, sometimes Dennis Crouch, Scott Simontagi. So a lot of these people I go around with and do shows. So if somebody wants to come hear me, they might see some of these people.
Oh, good.
And yeah, Randy, good Lord. I first heard him alongside Jim Lauderdale a lot of years ago, and we exchanged business cards at that time, which was before he had a bunch of hair on his face and other wacky things. A lot of years later, I was out with my friend Red Bolcart, a great Telecaster player, and he was sitting in with Randy. Randy got up to sing at the Nashville Country Palace and just like raised the hairs on everybody's arms with his high C notes, full voice.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. Yep. And so there was a, I don't know if you remember Ron Spears. He died not too long
ago. I do.
So Ron was an old friend of mine from Special Consensus days, and I had him earmarked for three different tenor parts on the record, three different songs. And we got him practiced, and he was ill at the time that we practiced, but then he died a few months later. So I had to plug those holes with other great high singers. But it's in my mind, it's always kind of a bit of a tribute to Ron's memory.
Yeah, that's nice. I didn't know. But yeah, that's a nice. I'm glad you told me some of these people travel with you. Let's skip back up to Molly and the Old Man. Now that, it doesn't have your banjo playing. It has Allison Brown, who can do everything wonderfully with great skill. And that is a tune that is an older sounding song to me. And actually, it's about Molly and the Old Man playing music. And then towards the end, it's played out the Cluck Old Hen, which is part of the lyric. So you actually do take, I don't know how many, 15, 20 seconds to play Cluck Old Hen as you're getting out of the song. I think it's another great old-timey sound to me.
Yeah. I mean, all of this has sort of personal threads that loosely like tie into my experience. And that song is about, it's kind of about what we're talking about with the long-haired bluegrass thing. It's music as a connection between generations. And in this case, it's a daughter and her father. Mm-hmm. And I had a friend when I was young in North Carolina, when I was a teenager in North Carolina, named Jesse Thompson. And Jesse and I sang together a little bit. And her dad played with a band down there called Red Clay Ramblers. He played banjo with them. And Tommy Thompson was his name. And their house was kind of a meeting ground for generations and for people. Then there were always instruments there. And in thinking back on that as an adult, I thought, that's just a great role model and example of how to use music. It's, for me, there was always this strong idea that music wasn't just like this remote celebrity on a stage thing, but it was also a living room thing. And I was grateful to have examples. I mean, like my parents and like Tommy and others, when I was coming along. So that sort of informs that song.
Yeah, it's a good one. And if you're just tuning in, I'm real happy to be talking to Robbie Foulkes about his brand new album, Bluegrass Vacation. It's on Compass. And we've kind of been bouncing around some different concepts and what the album is about in general, and then we focused on some. I want you to, because you thought this would be a good one to segue into. And I've listened to Angels Carry Me Away so many times. It's an absolutely beautiful song. I don't know that it's, I don't know what's bluegrass and what isn't. I just know that's a beautiful song. I think it fits well with here, but that's got it. That's got to be some personal experience mixed in there.
Yeah, it's that old generational thing again. So in this one, it's kind of based on me and my dad. You know, we had some rough spots in our relationship, and the guy singing the song went into music as a career as I did, and he had kids as I did, and anyway, so there's three generations right there. And and it ends with a little realization that if people listen to it, they can imagine that, which is true, that I didn't know where it was going as I was writing it. So it was really happy that this little observation landed in my lap, the thing that ends the song.
Yeah, the circle all comes back around again. So you have set up for us Angels Carry Me Away. I want to mention, of course, you're on it with guitar, Chris Eldridge, Todd Phillips on bass, Sarah Hull. She does a mandolin break with about 30 seconds left, which is the most perfect comment on this entire song.
So good. Oh, so good.
Oh, my. And then Stuart Duncan, can't get any better than Stuart. And Sierra Hull's other half, Justin Moses, plays dobro, and as you know, he can play everything better than everybody, but it's a great combination of instruments on there. So let's do that. We'll play Angels Carry Me, and I'll come back and chat with Robbie Foulkes a little bit more. Thanks, Robbie. We'll play this one. I'll be right back. There it is. That's the song. I think I'm so glad, Robbie, we're back now that you mentioned that as one to play, because I just think that's a fascinating tune, beautiful tune, beautiful song. I don't know how to describe it.
Well, you know, I should mention I actually wrote it around Sierra. You know, I go up to the desert to write songs sometimes, and I put on her records because I knew that she had a session with me coming up, and I thought I just want to think about the way she plays and what she brings to the table that nobody else quite brings. And so I kind of started with that groove and imagining that she could play long, slow notes. She could play, you know, fast 16th notes or do whatever in between. And kind of, it seemed to me like she could kind of feel the theme and the groove of that song really, really well. And of course she did. And then you mentioned Chris Eldridge. There's a funny thing that happened with him, because we both play, you know, the same instrument, and I wasn't originally maybe picturing having another guitarist on the record, but he came in one day and I thought, man, he's playing rhythm so much better than me that I'm gonna like go back. I ended up re-recording some songs with him playing the guitar, because it just the glue was unbelievable, specifically the glue between him and Dennis Crouch and Ronnie McCurry. Like, I re-recorded songs with those three playing on them.
Oh, that's
it was just
cool.
Like, just totally lifted it.
Yeah, well, that's, I like to hear what goes on in selections and tunes and how things are made, and that's an interesting point. I will tell you this, there's an instrumental on the tune, Silver Lake Reel, which is a great tune, and I don't know if this is an Easter egg, Robbie, or what, but I've listened several times. You don't have a vocal. Actually, on the inside of the album, it says Robbie Folks vocal guitar.
And then it says, it does?
Yeah, yeah.
My fault.
And well, it's okay. I don't think there is. Did I miss one, or it was so low? The decibels were so low that I have to have another piece of equipment.
Oh, though. Lord. Well, yeah,
okay.
My fault, totally.
It's not, you know, I enjoyed it, listening through it, thinking, wait a minute. Robbie says it was a vocal, but I love those. I love that tune. That's the instrumental on the tune, and it kicks at a pretty good pace, which is what it should. If you're going to call something a reel, I think it's supposed to kind of move along.
I'm glad somebody's reading all these liner notes that I write. That's good to hear.
I just smiled. I thought, you know, how do you get them all straight all the time? I talked a little. You mentioned a little bit about Greg Cahill, and I don't want to go back and revisit the whole topic. But you did play with Special Consensus for a while, and I wasn't aware of that. So that was kind of you were very young at the time, as I understand. But you know, that's a college right there. That's a college education in bluegrass and performing.
Yeah, I wasn't super young, but I was certainly younger than those guys. And this is in like the late 80s, and I was sort of the young fire-breathing revolutionary in the group, as I recall. And sort of, I mean, in some ways I kicked their butts, but in more ways they probably kicked mine. And it was my first professional thing in music. And I remember the first trip we took that I got into the Econoline van, and I asked the bassist where we were headed, because I couldn't remember what town we were headed to. And he said, well, I don't know. And I said, what state are we going to? And he also didn't know that. And I thought, geez, I'm never going to be so old and out of it that I don't know where we're going.
Surprise.
You know, on a given day.
Surprise.
But I think I might have almost reached that point. It was just like so educational being in their midst and just sort of learning the rhythms of the road and how not to drive yourself crazy with, you know, driving to a different place to play every night.
I can't imagine that, Courtney. But, you know, I know that people like you and people like them, they get used to it, and they get used to that rhythm on the road, and it's just like part of their life. I can't imagine it. I can't imagine it, and I just think, you know, hats off to those people who do the traveling and show up and perform and kill it and move on to the next one. I can't wrap my head around that kind of it's got to be dedication to the music, really.
It really is, and it's surprisingly easy sometimes to lose sight of that as the main motivator. But if you do it across decades, I find that the only way that I've stayed healthy is to be married and have a life outside it, number one. Number two, to sort of keep control of your urges, like, you know, we mentioned the whiskey song earlier, which is also an autobiographical song.
Yeah,
so keep a lid on some of that, but also equally important is just to keep your eye on what you're trying to do, which is not just stay afloat and pay the rent, but to move onward with music, to be just better and making songs, playing instruments, and singing. And that's that's what it's about for me.
Yeah. Well, you I mentioned at the beginning an instrumental, and then you've taken one from the Delmore Brothers, a nice take on Nashville blues. I don't hear many people do that, but I love this. I love this version. I just think, well, that's a perfect bluegrass song, as it was then.
Well, thanks. On the Doc Watson's first Vanguard record, which we had, it's one of the first memories of records for me, just being 3 years old and hearing that coming off of my dad's hi-fi. So Nashville Blues is the first song and the first side of that. And it always relates hard to Doc for me. And I never heard the Delmore's version until years later. But once I had the harmony
their killer. They were killers.
Dyads on their version. The way they sang together was like nobody else. And I think, you know, people talk a lot, obviously, about the Everlys and about the Lubins, but to me, the Delmores are the secret hidden masters of harmony singing.
And you've got Tim O'Brien, who can sing any part. He's on Mantle. He's also teaming with you on singing on that one. And I would ask Tim to sing on every song I ever did, truthfully.
Oh, he's such a hero. Yeah, he's great.
The and one of the songs that just kicks my butt, and I have so many stars by this one, if you drop right down to the Let the Old Dog In, that's at a speed. I don't know that it can be clicked out any faster, but Let the Old Dog In is just, that's like everybody's there, and Jerry Douglas is there, and then you've got John Callan, who shows up every once in a while, and Shad Cobbin. That just flies. That's a burning bluegrass song.
That's such a memorable, that's one of the most memorable sessions I've done in my life, because it was the day that I met Jerry, first of all. So that was like, I was really floating from that. And as far as the tempo, I remember like Dennis, the bassist, setting the, I told him, I want to play this so fast that I personally can't play it. You know, I'm just going to stand here and sing. And he starts leaning into that tempo. He said, boy, it's been a long time since I played anything this fast. And I thought, yeah, this is, we're in the right place then, you know? And I'm like, okay, Chris Eldridge, you got to do a guitar solo because this is too fast for me to play. And he says, well, it's too fast for me to play too. He can't solo on it either.
I have three arrows up on that song on my list that I read from. And that to me is like, that's the three arrows I think is the most I can have on a fast song. I think that's the fastest it gets. But that's one that just absolutely, yeah, it's great. It burns. It's a lot. And so many great people. You had mentioned, and by the way, again, if you're tuning in, you should have tuned in earlier. We're talking to Robbie Foulkes about Bluegrass Vacation, his newest album that's on Compass Records. And I just love it so much. And you had picked out the songs that I featured that I actually go to and play, not the ones we talk about. But I think now that we've discussed your contact with those founders of the music, and then your contact with the long-haired rock guys, I think it's perfect for you to do a little bit longer elaboration on long-haired bluegrass, and then I'll say goodbye to you, and I'll play that for the audience.
Well, excuse me. Like I said, it comes from the memory of that 1973 festival, which was 3 days and probably 25 acts a day, all different every day, so like 75, 80 people. And everybody you can imagine, from Wilma Lee Cooper to Ralph Stanley to Porter Church to the New... It's the first time I saw Newgrass Revival, first time I saw Tony Trischka, first time I saw Norman Blake, and my mind was just so freaking blown by all these people. It was just a lifelong memory. And a related one, by the way, this same year, 1973, there was a show in Richmond that my dad and mom took me to. And the first act was Doc and Merle Watson. Second act was John Hartford playing solo. And the third act was Earl Scruggs and his kids. And that was another touchstone for me. And it just changed the course of my life. And aside from me, like the happy thing that I dwell on in singing long hair bluegrass is that here we are in 2024, and most of those people, with notable exceptions of a few like Tony Rice, a couple others, but most of those people are not only still alive, they're still
cutting edge,
vigorous, and young, and playing as well as ever. It's really kind of a miracle to me.
Yeah, you got Sam Bush on there, he's one of them, and like John Cowan, we talked about vocalists, but Sam gets to sing and play with you, and Allison's on that one also, which I think is always a plus.
Yeah. Yeah. John hasn't lowered his keys over the years.
No,
Sam's
no.
playing as well as ever. And like this, I don't think this happens so much in rock music, but bluegrass is special for creating this healthful, apparently this healthful environment where people we'll can get that. Into their 70s and be as great
still
as ever.
Perform. Have you heard the story where Sam was interviewing and John Cowan came to be a new member of the band? And have you heard this? Sam says, what do you do? And he goes, well, I play bass and I sing a little bit. And Sam says, well, I do the singing. And
then John, we already have a singer in
well,
this band.
And then John sang and he says, okay, you can do the singing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great, I mean, you know, what can, he is, he's got that, well, we're talking about John Cowan now, but that's just a fascination for me. But
well, that's kind of like the thing I said about Chris Eldridge, and it's the wonderful thing about this music, yeah. that it's like, if you can do it, you're in, and if you can do it a little bit faster and better than somebody else, then you get the nod, and hats off to you.
That's right. That's right, man. Robbie, folks, so thank you so much for spending some time to talk about this album. I hope I got into as much as you wanted, but not too much that it bored you. But I love this album, Bluegrass Vacation on Compass. I know it's on Compass's. Is it on your website too? Can people find Robbie Foulkes and find this album?
Yeah, I'll mail it to you if you want one, and it's on Amazon and the usual places. Yeah.
If they go to your website, will they find that I mentioned, I don't know, 15, 16 other, are those things available there, or would they have to search for those somewhere if they find out that I really like this guy, Robbie Foulkes, and I want to go listen to the rest of the stuff he's done?
Well, all my records that are currently in print are available through me and my site. So,
okay, all right.
Yeah.
I assume it's just your name. If someone types in your name, they'll find you.
Yeah, RobbieFoulkes.com.
Okay. Easy enough. Thanks, Robbie. I'm going to play because you've done a nice intro to Long Hair Bluegrass, and I'll let you go. And thanks again for your time and the beautiful music you've done.
Well, it's a total pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. See you later, Rob.
Okay, bye-bye.